You're listening to Syntax, the podcast with the tastiest web development treats out there. Strap yourself in and get ready. Here is Scott Tolinsky and Wes Boss.
Welcome to Syntax. Thanks for checking out the podcast with the tastiest web development treats. My name is Wes Boss, and with me, as always, is Scott Tolinsky. Today, we're going to be talking all about learning. How do you learn quickly? How do you pick up new topics in this ever-changing, fast-paced industry? Being able to be a quick learner is probably a super invaluable skill. So we're going to be going through all that. Today, we're sponsored by Netlify and Fluent Conference. We'll talk a little bit more about both of those companies partway through the episode. However, Scott just got back from San Francisco, and I'm told he has an amazing story to tell us, or interesting story. So how you doing, first of all?
I've had better 24-hour periods of time in my life. I'm just going to go ahead and say that because, first off, the first half of my trip to San Francisco was incredible. I had a great time. I thought I killed my talk at Zeit Day. The whole thing was great. Everyone's talks were great. Zeit Day overall was amazing. It was just a great experience. So, after that, there was an after party, whatever. I went to a friend's place to hang out for a little bit. A guy I've known since the University of Michigan. And so I had taken an Uber home, right? Or a Lyft home. I noticed my thumb is like aching a little bit. And I'm just thinking, okay, that's sort of weird. Maybe I hit it and I didn't notice it. So didn't think anything of it. Go to bed. Like 2 in the morning, I wake up and it felt like someone had hit my thumb with a hammer. Like it was just throbbing. And it hurt so bad that it woke me up and my heart was pounding. So I looked at it. I ran under some cold water and I went back to bed. And I was thinking like, this is weird. This has gotten significantly weirder. And I woke up and maybe at like 4 a.m. again. And it was so much worse. Like pain-wise, swollen-wise, it was huge, and it was just absolutely killing me. So I couldn't sleep. So I got no sleep, right? So this is the start of the ordeal. I got no sleep. And then, so I wake up, eventually sort of get my stuff together, take a shower, and get ready to go, because I got to hop on an airplane at like 2. Actually, I think the flight was at 1. Sorry, flight was at 1. So okay. I get out and I look in the mirror. And so my thumb at this point is huge and bright red. But there is a line, like a thick, like 1-inch thick line going all the way from my thumb, all the way up my arm. And it's like streaky all the way up my bicep into my armpit. And my armpit was all swollen. And like at this point, I'm like, this is really weird. So I Google that. And apparently, like the first posting in there is just like, if you see red streaks, go to the emergency room right now, no matter what.
No.
And I was just like, what? I have a plane to catch. I have no idea. So I called my doctor and he was like, well, it's either a blood clot or it's an infection of the lymph nodes. And so that's what it ended up being, the lymphadenitis, I think it is, which can end up to like an infection of the bloodstream, which can be fatal. And the whole thing is very dangerous. So at this point, I still didn't really know what it was. So I'm hopping on a Lyft to go to the airport because I figure maybe I'll just head to the ER on the way home or something, or on like once I get back to Denver.
Yeah.
And my doctor's like, yeah, so if I were you, I would not get on a plane right now. I would do anything but that. I would go to the doctor. So at this point, I'm like getting really stressed out. I hadn't slept. I hadn't eaten anything all day. It was like maybe like 11. I hadn't eaten whatever. But my whole worldview just starts to really compress. Like my ringing in my ears. I can't breathe. I'm like sweating really hard. And I'm freaking the other guy in the Lyft out as well as the driver. Cause I'm like, I opened the window. I like stuck my head out the window or whatever. And they were just like, you know, I have the AC on. I'm like, I need air, take me to the emergency room. And they're just like, what's going on? Luckily the guy in my Lyft was super cool. And, he was from Cleveland. He was like trying to talk me through it, but I basically passed out. Everything just like totally went out, and I kind of like came to, and the other passenger in the Lyft Like, so it was like, it was super duper cool. I kept apologizing, but he was just like, hey, so where are you from? And he was like, just trying to make small talk to get my like brain in that zone. I totally appreciate that. So I figured I would just sort of walk it off at the airport, which I did. Meanwhile, Courtney is looking up ERs and places that will take our insurance in San Francisco. I'm not super familiar with any of the area. So she eventually found some place. So from the airport, I already had my bags and everything. I just took another lift to the ER from the airport, got checked in, and they looked at me. They saw like the streak on my arm, and the first thing she says to me is like, you're going to be here for a little bit. And I was just like, oh great. Okay. So I got checked in. I got shot up with some antibiotics, some painkillers and some stuff, was given a prescription. And it turns out my flight was super delayed. So after all of this, I'm actually still wearing my hospital band, but after all of this, I walked from the hospital, like walked out of the hospital with my suitcase and everything to a Walgreens a couple blocks down, got my prescription, took another lift to the airport again, hopped on my plane, and still made my flight somehow after all of this.
Holy.
Get this. It gets worse. Well, it doesn't get worse. It doesn't get too much worse, at least. Well, so at the same time, Courtney, my wife, is experiencing some really weird symptoms, and she calls a doctor. And so she's at home with our 11-month-old, Landon, and they tell her she needs to go to the urgent care. What? Like, we don't even know what's going on, right? So she drops Landon off at the neighbors, who are awesome enough to take him, put him down, and she heads out to the urgent care to get looked at. And she actually had something that's like kind of similar, which is weird because we definitely didn't. It was like the skin version of whatever I had. So she's on antibiotics or whatever. But is that I didn't bring a house key. So I finally get home and I'm locked outside for like 3 hours while I have to wait for her to get to the urgent care. So I just pulled out, I sat in my backyard, and you know, I get Wi-Fi in the backyard and just popped open my computer and worked on some code because that's my life.
Holy smokes.
Yeah.
That's a crazy story.
Yeah, it totally sucked. Everything about it
sucked. Wow. And you're both going to be okay?
I'm pumped full of antibiotics. I've been taking them on the clock, and I still have the streak going up my arm. They told me it's going to be a little bit before it goes away, but my thumb is gigantic right now. It's like double the size of what it is. I can't bend it or anything. I have no idea how any of this happened. It's totally bizarre.
Wow. And you both had it. I once cut my hand, and my hand started swelling up in just over like 2 days. And then I started looking it up. And of course, it's like,
yeah,
it can, infection. It's like an infection, and it can like spread to your bones. And they had to cut your arm off. And I was freaked out. And luckily, thank goodness for antibiotics.
Yeah, seriously. Yeah, that's no joke. So if anyone saw my tweet that I was saying I had to go to the ER, that is the story about it. I'm psyched I got it all taken care of. And let me tell you, that hospital I went to in SF was like top notch. Everyone there was amazing. So good experience there, I guess.
That's pretty cool. Wow, that's yeah, quite the story.
Yeah. A great way to cap story off.
This story is brought to you by Netlify. Thank you for Netlify. Awesome. Well, that's a pretty cool story. Send Scott your love. I'm thankful that you didn't die.
Yeah,
like you're healthy now. Awesome. Well, Scott's talk in SF at Zeit Day was all about learning, and we thought we would sort of parlay his layout into a podcast so we can spread the love a little bit further and sort of help everyone else learn. So do you want to give us sort of a rundown or kick it off, and we'll you'll sort of lead through this, and then I'll throw in my two cents as I have stuff to say.
Yeah, so if you saw my talk, some of this stuff's going to be a little bit redundant, but if you didn't, hopefully all of this information is super useful to you. So, well, the main idea here is that we have several different things that you can augment your process while you're working to maybe make learning more favorable, right? So one of the sort of global things that you want to be having in mind is understanding how you learn. And how you learn best. And I always talk about, like, I see people in my YouTube comments or wherever, or even on like Reddit, they'll say like, videos are a terrible way to learn. And like, Or blog posts are a terrible way to learn, or apps are terrible. I mean, none of that's true because everyone has a totally different learning style, right? So whether it's videos or blogs or whatever, you need to figure out what your preferred learning platform media is. Because for me, I have a terrible short-term memory. I tell this story that, you know, Courtney, while she was getting her doctorate, had to do a bunch of psychological tests. So because of that, I have like every psychological test. She has like a complete breakdown of my psychological profile, which I should mention she did before we got married. So maybe she knows something that she saw. It was like, okay, I guess he's all right. But my short-term memory was so bad, seriously, that I don't have an IQ because it's just in the dumpster. It invalidates the IQ test because my short-term memory is really bad. So because of that, reading blog posts or long stretches of text like really sucks for me. It like my eyes gloss over and I like end up reading the same lines twice or three times or whatever. One of the reasons why I listen to audiobooks instead of reading books. But so for me, like I learn best big concepts from video tutorials and like code concepts best from just going into the docs and trying out the code examples in the docs and then sort of like cutting my teeth that way. Did you know what your best learning media is, Wes?
Yeah, totally. It's kind of interesting that you say that you don't learn well from reading is because I never read books. Like in my entire life, I can probably count, especially like all through high school, I always read the Cliff Notes. All through university, I almost never read the textbooks. And I just thought that I wish that I could, but I just couldn't. I couldn't stick to it. I had to read things over and over again, and it was really hard for me to suck information out of a book. And I just thought that I'm just a bad learner. But it turns out that just wasn't my learning style, because as soon as I found audiobooks, and I had always been a child of the internet, and I wasn't dumb. I was always like learning stuff and building stuff, right? So it was kind of cool when both audiobooks became popular, because like I now consume an incredible amount of audiobooks.
Yeah.
And when YouTube and all these video sites came out, I was like, wow, I can consume this information so quickly. And I was always so jealous of people who could do speed reading and who were able to just like suck up a book really quickly. And now I'm able to do that with video, which is really, really cool. So I think that video is definitely my learning type as well. And I also stress that even if you find some videos and you find you're not driving well, you may not have just found the type of learning as well. Because even inside a video, there's still like a lot of my stuff that I build is very much practical and example-based and real world. And some people absolutely love that. And then there's another crowd of people who love the FUBAR Baz and just prefer to focus on concepts, and that's how they learn, right? There's a couple different groups of people. So I would definitely first try out different mediums, books, videos, whatever it is, conference talks. And then even inside of that, it's going to be a bit before you find the type of trainer or the type of video that you like. And I think that's why I do well, is that not everyone likes my stuff, but I have found my little crew of people who particularly like the way that I explain things. And I'm sure you have that as well, Scott.
Yeah. And that's actually, I don't know if you have seen my slides, but that's the very next slide.
No.
That is the very next slide. is to find your preferred learning resources, right? Because again, there's 100 YouTube teaching programming channels, but even if one channel has 200,000 subs and one channel has 200 subs, you will find that the cross section between those is not actually that big, because chances are it's just one person prefers one of those channels teaching methods or learning styles or whatever. So if you do find these people, then like, yeah, find, you know, subscribe and follow the stuff they're doing and buy their products, because really, like, if someone speaks to you the right way, then that person most likely just learns things or has this teaching style that is going to be compatible to you. So, I mean, you do want to find these people. I remember the first time that I was listening to a lot of video tutorials, and there were some like WordPress ones that we had bought at my agency, and I watched them and I could not stand the instructor. I don't know who the instructor was, and not to be mean or anything, but like it just did not vibe with me. I didn't like what he was doing. I didn't like his style. And then I've always really, really liked, I don't know if you ever listened to a lot of like Jeffrey Way tutorials, He had been doing tutorials for like NetTuts back in the day.
Yeah, NetTuts is the kind of the first one that I really found jive well with me, because it wasn't this like very cold approach to learning to program, a very boring, like, I think that you find that quite a bit on like lynda.com tutorials, where you just get someone with a PowerPoint and recording a PowerPoint, and that's so boring. Whereas if you find someone that you like at the time NetTuts, I really enjoyed it, then that goes a long way in increasing your learning.
Yeah, same here. Okay, so the next little headline, I guess, is going to be to improve your foundational skills. And the best part about this is that you don't have to spend time to focus on these specifically. Like, people want to say improve your foundational skills, but the cool thing is you can improve your foundational skills while learning a framework, while doing this or that. But you want to be having that mind to improve your foundational skills 24/7, because the best part about core JavaScript, CSS, HTML skills, programming skills, all that stuff, the best part about improving those all the time is that you can take them from project to project, and then the framework matters less, right? Because you just end up having to learn the syntax of the framework rather than how you do stuff in JavaScript, because chances are frameworks are all based heavily, heavily, heavily on JavaScript core concepts. And while there is going to be some magic here and there with things like Vue, it's still having those skills in JavaScript are going to make you much, much better at the framework than being good at the framework will.
I found that, I don't know if you found this as well, but I found when I picked up React a couple of years ago, my just like JavaScript got so much better because React does have a little bit of magic here and there, but almost everything in React is just JavaScript at the end of the day, and it forces you to get better. So I really understand binding and like the arrow functions and scope and modules and all of these things that are just JavaScript at the end of the day. I found that React forced me to get much better at that. And on the flip side, I just taught a React workshop this past week, and I found that there was a lot of stuff in there that was a huge tripping point for people that was just JavaScript at the end of the day.
Oh, so, okay. Yeah, this is a perfect lead into a story that I tell in my presentation. Man, you are like, I feel like you watched this. One of the stories that I tell is that I had like a YouTube comment before on one of my React videos, and someone was like, oh, I totally, you know, like this React style of thing, but I don't understand why the React developers chose to use the word map for looping over stuff. Like, wouldn't it make more sense to use like a dot loop? And like, again, if you don't have your core JavaScript skills, you don't necessarily understand that that dot map is just outputting an array, and you're just returning an array, and that's all it's doing. So in actual React, you could have just output that as an array itself rather than like a loop, so to say. So it's like having those core JavaScript skills, you recognize things in a different way, and then you stop looking at it as this is the framework's way of doing things and this is the JavaScript way of doing things. And again, same for me. React was like, it totally improved my JavaScript skills all the way around. Okay, so yeah, in addition to that, like, you want to be focusing on the stuff that you can take with you from project to project, because you don't want to have to learn things more than once. And this is especially true with libraries. So if you're using a library, like, why would you use like a React cookie library when there's a JavaScript cookie library or something, right? Because then you only have to learn the API once. You can bring it with you from project to project, and then you don't have to relearn the Vue way of working with cookies or something. You just have the JavaScript way of working with cookies or the JavaScript way of working with local storage. So then you only have to learn things once again, and you don't have to spend the time. So that's obviously going to make learning faster if you have to learn less things, right?
Yeah, this is one thing I didn't like at all when I moved away from jQuery and I started picking up these frameworks. And I would Google, even Angular had this. Angular had its own way to make HTTP requests, and they had their own like way to add an authentication middleware. And I didn't like that I had to like go out and find my own pieces for data fetching and for managing cookies and for JWT. And I was like, why is this stuff not built into the library? But it now makes a lot more sense after having done it for a number of years, because any time that I do anything, I can just bring along Axios and I know exactly how Axios works, or I can bring along a cookie library, or I can bring along a local storage, and it just works everywhere that you go. And there's no relearning, like you said, there's no relearning of how to do it in a specific framework. I think it does take a little bit of like learning initially, and mm-hmm. it also takes a lot of, you have to be confident in choosing your own libraries, which I know a lot of people don't want. They just want to be told what to use. But I think we start to see these sort of major libraries in every single area surface themselves, like date functions and Axios and whatnot.
Yeah, and chances are those libraries are going to have a much larger community behind them, because there's more people in different frameworks and different things using them. So they're going to exist for longer, they're going to see updates for longer, and they're going to have more people behind them. Okay, so let's talk about saving time. And one of the best ways that you can save time is by using something like Netlify to host your sites, because Netlify has so many awesome features that save me and Wes a ton of time when we want to deploy things. For instance, they have some new, and keep in mind, these features are only pay for what you use for all of the features, right? So each individual feature has its own pricing tier, which is just totally excellent. So they have some excellent features, such as the new functions, which make AWS serverless functions as easy as it's ever been. I mean, this thing, it totally takes all of the barriers to entries away for using serverless functions. You can just pop in a function here and there, and Netlify makes it super easy. There's also the identity feature, which allows you to manage signups, logins, passwords, all sorts of that stuff for your users without a server-side component, so that way you can have client-side authentication and client authentication on your website without actually having a server, having to manage any of the difficult technical stuff. You can just use their system and have it nice, easy peasy. There's also forms, which I've been using a ton, which basically allows you to submit all sorts of comment forms, right? Whether this is sending an email off, or it could also trigger a webhook, or maybe post in a Slack channel. So there's a ton of different possibilities there with the new Netlify's forms feature. Either way, all of these features are excellent and just extremely easy to use. I think that's one of the things people comment on the most on Twitter I see when they sign up for Netlify through Syntax is, wow, I just signed up and holy cow, deploying my site was easy.
It's like they don't believe us, and then they actually try it and like, oh wow, that was amazing.
Yeah, it really is amazing. And I don't say that as someone advertising something. I say that as someone who uses it and is amazed by it. So check out netlify.com/syntax and sign up and start hosting on Netlify today, because let me tell you, it's a pretty sweet experience.
Wicked. All right, let's jump into the next one. What's the next point that you got here?
Yeah, next point is to narrow your focus. A lot of times you'll see posts where people are like, hey, I want to learn React plus Redux plus Webpack plus this and that all at the same time, plus style components, whatever. Just throw it all in there. Throw it all in there at once. And the problem with that is like when you start to learn a whole bunch of like big concepts and frameworks at once, you don't necessarily see the boundaries between them. And you start to see like if you're learning, let's say, React and Redux, you're not learning the way React does things. You're learning the way that React and Redux does things together. And you're not learning the way Redux does things by itself either, right? You're learning this whole system at once. And the big problem with that is that let's say I want to learn Apollo, right? And I want to replace Redux with Apollo state link and stuff like that. Now you have to learn a whole bunch of stuff over again, right? It's almost like starting fresh, because it's not totally starting fresh, but the amount of stuff that you have to relearn is considerably more because you don't have the individual experience with each thing. So my strategy is to learn one thing by itself, React. I'm going to learn React by itself. I'm going to learn it really good. Then I'm going to learn Redux by itself or Redux plus React. But either way, the boundaries between those are much more separate so that I can always go back to my core React skills. Without Redux or without Apollo, whatever. And then you can supplement. I like to say it's like a Git merge. You're like merging your content into the stuff that already exists.
Totally. That was actually one of when I first launched my React course, like about 3 years ago, that was probably the biggest pushback that I got was I even have like a funny FAQ on the website that asks if I'm using any of these Flux libraries, because people assume that you need to learn all of these things together, when I knew after having learned both of them myself, I'm like, no, it's better for your own learning if you just focus on React itself. Trust me. And thankfully, Dan Abramov, the creator of Redux, tweeted out, don't learn Redux and React at the same time. Learn just React, because then when you move away from Redux, or if you need to build, you might not need it. Like, people ask me all the time, like, how do you know if you need Redux? And I tell them, don't build it without. And trust me, you'll find out when you need it, because you'll know exactly when that pain point starts hitting.
Yeah, exactly. And so many people are like, I don't see the point of Redux. Well, then you don't need it yet. You don't need to learn. Yeah. Like, why would you waste your time learning something that you don't need? Unless, of course, you're building this big project. But in this case, it's specifically just learning, right? It's just projects for learning. One of the things I don't recommend doing is like picking a serious, real project to learn something. I like to learn things on sort of side projects or here and there, like throwaway code, right? So again, you know, when you learn these things in bundles, the boundaries become blurred, right? And you end up sort of slowing down any additional future learning. So part of learning fast is not just learning fast right now, but learning fast in the future. So you don't want to slow down potentially learning things in the future by having these giant blocks of skills rather than these individual little modules, node modules, right? Little node modules of skills.
There you go.
Yeah, look at those analogies and metaphors. All right, so the next big step is to get excited about whatever you're doing, because whenever you're excited about something, I don't know about you, but I really immerse myself in it. I dive in and I get very, not necessarily obsessed, but you get to the point where you start thinking about it in a way that is much more in depth. So for me, like, I like to think about when you first start learning programming or like major concepts and you get really excited. Like when you first started programming, it was like you were getting all these big wins and you were making stuff and you're like, holy cow, I can put a background color of green on an HTML page. That's amazing. So like you end up getting really excited about what you're doing and you just drives you to learn more and more and more. And then all of a sudden you reach this point where you've been doing that for so long and it's starting, the grind starting to get there, and you sort of lost that feeling. You've lost that love and feeling. You're not exactly like as like just into it as you were before. So you want to start thinking about that initial feeling of excitement that you got, because when you are excited again, you turn into Hacker Man. You start hacking time. Yeah.
I think this is probably the biggest point behind the entire episode for me, is that if you're excited, if you're invested in the things that you are building, and that's why we always, anytime that I have something, we always build something that is fun to build and looks good and is actually something you do in the real world. You could parlay that into an application that you want to deploy to production, because you need to be invested in the thing that you're building. Otherwise, you will fizzle out. You won't be all excited. Even if it's silly to think about what the thing looks like when you're building it, and some people are like, whatever, just slap foundation on it. But then you're not invested in it. You don't have any pride in it, right? You're not going to put that little shine on it, that extra 10% to make it ready for production and be able to show other people.
Yeah, and to go along with this, I mean, people say, "Well, okay, you gotta be excited." But how do you get excited about stuff? And you know, you said to make it look nice, right? To make it, to be proud of it, right? That's going to make you excited. And one of the things I like to do about projects like this is to build them around hobbies. And we've touched on this before, building projects along with your hobbies. Find something that already excites you. So if the code itself doesn't excite you, find something external, a hobby or something that you're already excited about. Let's say you just watched Game of Thrones and you're like totally pumped about it. Like, make a Game of Thrones themed project, right? I have most of my courses, we do things like work with the MovieDB API or something like that. And sure enough, yeah, I get it. I'm teaching you to build a movie listing. But if you don't care about movies, like, I recommend finding an API of your own and using it instead of whatever I'm doing, and try to apply the concepts that we're learning in the series. Because if you're not excited about whatever you're doing, it's not going to help you. So most of my projects, yeah, most of my side projects as we do are like, breakdancing related or kung fu. One of my first projects was a kung fu film list I made so I could keep a database of all my favorite kung fu movies. And just find projects like that. I've had coworkers that are into beer brewing, so they wanted to learn how to build stuff with a Raspberry Pi, so they built this whole homebrew whole controller thing for their beer brewing process and use that as a project to learn their Raspberry Pi. I mean, there's just so many opportunities to learn stuff like that.
That's such a good point, because the thing that drives me nuts is overlearning GraphQL over the last 6 months. All of the examples are either Star Wars or what is it? Pokemon.
Yeah.
The two things I care the least about in the entire world are Star Wars and Pokemon. And I don't get what they are. Like, I don't understand, like, what a Jedi is, or
you don't understand what these the Pokemon.
I don't get it at all. Like, maybe if it was Crazy Bones or Pogs or something Crazy like that, Bones. I'd be into it. But it's just so frustrating to try to learn when it's all this jargon that you don't care about. It's just really funny.
Yeah, that's hilarious. Yeah, so find whatever it is you're not, you know, I mentioned before the co-creator of Level Up Tutorials, like, he was into, like, rare and expensive baseball gloves. So he was doing his project to help him buy and sell baseball gloves. But that helped him learn Angular, and it had a double function of getting you excited as well as actually being practical and easy to use. So let's talk about something else that's extremely practical, is going to the FluentConf to up your skills. So with more about the FluentConf is Wes Boss.
Fluent is the web development conference brought to you by O'Reilly. You know O'Reilly, they have those books with the animals on front of them. And I've actually spoken at Fluent Conference in the previous years. They invited me this year. Unfortunately, I couldn't make it, but I highly recommend checking it out. On June 11th to 12th, they got training. On June 12th to 14th, they have the tutorials and conference. And if you are trying to get better, or even just try to get excited again about JavaScript and web development and performance, anything that has to do with building websites, I would highly recommend that you check out this conference. They've got some amazing speakers lined up. What do we got here? Val Head. I just saw her this past week at a conference. Her talk was amazing, all about animation, different types of animation, SVG animation via JavaScript, via CSS. It was just like this amazing, like, someone who is an expert at animation and all of these different animation libraries. I just had to sit there for 40 minutes and have their, like, past years worth of work downloaded into my brain. And I find it amazing that you can just go to a conference and have all of these people brain dump everything they've learned in the last 6 months, a year into. Patrick Hammond, I've met him before. He does some amazing performance stuff. Brendan Eich, I don't know. I've never really heard of him, but apparently he's doing something about JavaScript. Peggy from Apollo, actually met her this past week in New York. She's super smart and knows a lot about Apollo and GraphQL, which is pretty sweet. So I would check it out at Fluent Conference. It's at conferences.oreilly.com. Use the coupon code SYNTAX to save 20% off. Thanks so much to Fluent for sponsoring.
Nice. Super cool. Thank you. Yeah, so the next thing about this is going to be, I like to call this grind time. And grind time is the part where you get to write a lot of code. One of my favorite things in my slides is that says, it says, give less shits, write more code, make more things, do stuff, start typing, right? People like to get hung up on best practices, this and that, when really they should get hung up on putting pen to paper and getting code output. Because if you're worried about breaking things all the time, and this is learning specifically, right? I'm not talking about you're starting a new project for serious, right? This is just specifically for learning. Break it all the time. Because in that process of breaking, you figure out how to troubleshoot, you figure out how to fix the problems, you figure out what potential problems there are, you figure out all these little pitfalls, and so you want to start getting your pen to paper as soon as possible and just start writing a lot of code.
Totally. It doesn't matter. I can't stress this enough. It doesn't matter what you use or how you do it. It doesn't matter if it's a best practice or if it's the worst code you've ever written. As long as you are actually writing code, stop talking about it. Stop researching it. Stop reading 1,000 Medium articles where people are pontificating about the best practices and whatnot. Those things, the best practices, will totally follow. But as long as you are putting pen to paper or putting fingers to keys and actually coding stuff, that's where you're going to see leaps and bounds. I've got another tip or little thing that has helped me in my own career, and it came from Adam Savage. I might have even mentioned this on the podcast before, but Adam Savage is the he's the Mythbuster, right? I'm sure many of you have grown up watching him, and he's got this awesome podcast where he often talks about making things. And he said once on it where he was teaching his son how to make a Leatherman holder out of leather, right? A Leatherman is like kind of this like little jackknife thing that you put in your pocket. And he said to his son, all right, first thing you need to do is submit to yourself that you are going to totally screw it up 3 or 4 times, and you are going to build this thing 3 or 4 times. And if you approach learning knowing that you're going to build this thing 3 or 4 times from scratch, you're going to scrap what you have and just throw it in the garbage. And if you're fine with that, because that is part of the learning, that's not frustrating, that's not setbacks or something like that, then you're going to have a much better time in knowing that that whole process of getting absolutely nowhere or seemingly getting absolutely nowhere is totally part of the process.
It's totally, yeah. And it's very important because, again, you just pick up so much little things in that you can only learn from experience. And I like to call this iteration-driven development, because you just write, you make a lot of stuff, and through quantity ends up coming out quality, because all of a sudden you know the pitfalls and you know the things that are wrong, and you've experienced them firsthand, and these big picture stuff starts to come into view. So another thing I really like to talk about here in the grind time is to use people that are smarter than you when you're writing a lot of code. I don't know if a lot of people came from Angular. When we first started writing Angular code, we had no idea what we were doing because there wasn't a whole lot of stuff out there about like best practices. So we were just sort of hacking things together. And then somewhere along the line, while we were working on our projects, the John Papa style guide came out, and it was sort of like illuminated everything. All of a sudden, this is how you do it. And so we would just go to that John Papa style guide and just read it top to bottom. And then all of a sudden you're just like, wow, it was like a total brain dump. Now I've seen all these patterns and I have a set of rules and I can follow these rules. So you want to work really hard, but then you want to find these style guides that can help you illuminate the best practices. I think I use the Airbnb style guide for the most part for React with some tweaks here and there. And along with these style guides, you're going to use snippet libraries. And it seems counterintuitive because a snippet library is going to be writing code for you. And here we are talking about writing lots of code and breaking stuff.
Yeah.
But if you use a snippet library, you're instantly exposed to best practices and you're instantly exposed to good code. So while you're learning the big pictures and the concepts, you also get to see, hey, this is what the good way of doing it looks like, or at least this is what this recommended way of doing it looks like. And then you start to just recognize that as big patterns, and your brain starts to say, this is what good code will look like, rather than, this is what my code looks like. And eventually you can put it like an ESLint in your thing to, check against these style guides and these snippet libraries, and you're instantly going to just be looking at good code all the time. And suddenly you're just going to be thinking in good code, because it's all of a sudden, it's not like, I'm just thinking in this. This is the way that I'm thinking about this is the right way to do it. So you end up refining yourself by using these sort of snippet libraries and style guides.
Yeah, once I had React down pat and then I flipped on the Airbnb ESLint rules, it was really interesting because it would highlight like all of my code, and it'd be frustrating because it tells you you're a garbage developer. Yeah. But it's kind of interesting to like read the rule and then go do a little bit of research as to why does this happen. And then I went from sort of like being able to build stuff in React to being able to build stuff in someone's idea of a best practice in React. And I think that that pushed me that extra step. Once I actually was able to build anything, then I started really doubling down on best practices and reading the whys and the hows behind it all.
You just gave me a great idea. In fact, yeah. this is a $1 million idea if somehow this could make money, which it can't. But what if there was like an ESLint library that instead of just like telling you, like when you highlight it and it tells you what the problem is, what if there is an ESLint library that insulted you a la Gordon Ramsay? It was just like, what are you, you bloody idiot? What are you doing? Like that would be hilarious. I would really love to have Gordon Ramsay, or it could like have a little Gordon Ramsay gif just like shouting at you for totally. This mistake
only
or that mistake.
Only amateurs use double quotes.
I really want to see this thing in action now. Along with that Gordon Ramsay thing, you know, because he gets on people for egos and whatever, is to like check your ego, because chances are you're coming in like thinking you're hot shit about something and you're not. I keep coming back to these stories that I tell during my presentation, but one of the stories I tell is about I came up with this on the spot a couple of weeks ago, because this is actually something that happened to me the day I was giving this talk at the React Denver meetup. There was this article about render props going around, and I saw it. It was like at the top of the Reddits and the Twitters and whatever, and I was just like, oh, I know render props. I don't need to read this. And so a day goes by and, you know, click through it and I see it and I'm like, oh, okay, it's still up there. Maybe I'll read it. Open the article. I learned like three things and I'm just like, yeah, here I am. I have a slide telling me to check my ego. And here I have with my ego being like, yeah, you're smart. You know this. And then sure enough, there's so much stuff I could have learned. So there's so many learning opportunities if you just always invoke some sort of student mentality, this sort of like, I am always a student. Because in this industry, you can't really afford to be a master of anything. You have to be a student, which is one of the reasons why I hate on resumes when people put like progress bars on something. If it was realistic, you should have your progress bar being at like, you know, 50% or zero the whole time, because you're never done learning something.
Yeah, that's just to infinity.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, so the last one is going to be total immersion. This is the most fun one because you can do it while you're doing other stuff and you subscribe to any sort of YouTube, blog, podcast, whatever. You just totally immerse yourself. When I want to learn anything, like I want to learn personal finance, I subscribe to like 800 personal finance podcasts and I listen to them all until I'm totally sick of it. And it's yep. just like that with anything, right? You just totally immerse yourself and you don't even need to focus on it. Because again, if you're hearing people who are smart about something talk about something, you eventually start to think like the smart people think, because you're getting this just sort of implanted into your brain. And this sort of goes along with one of our sponsors in the O'Reilly conference, is that conferences are a great way to do this too. You sit down at a conference and you just sort of get this brain dump from everyone that's coming in and giving you their information.
Yeah, totally. I do this all the time. Whenever I'm like, right now I'm trying to get into meat curing, and mm-hmm. and what am I doing? Well, I'm following all these people on Instagram. I'm watching 1,000 different YouTube videos. I'm reading all kinds of blog posts about people's experiences, and you just sort of like total immersion into that specific topic. And then at a certain point, I will get good enough at it where I don't necessarily care about it all that much. And I'll be able to just sort of like let go of some of that stuff. But when you're in that learning mode, I think it's super, super important.
Yeah. Hugely important. And it's easy too, because again, you get a lot of this stuff just by clicking subscribe and by showing up. If all of a sudden your YouTube feed is filled with a billion videos on GraphQL, you're going to see some that, you know, fit your fancy. You're going to open them up and learn stuff. This is the most fun step, because you have to do the least hard work in this step.
All right. So I got a couple more points here. Not really sure where they fit in along the thing, but these are just sort of some things that help me when I'm learning something new. And the first one is to just scan the docs really quickly. You don't necessarily have to read all of the documentation, although I generally do. But I just scan the documentation to understand what the surface area of that library is, so that when you have a problem with something or when you need to do something, you can realize like, okay, I remember they had a specific thing for working with a cache in that way in the documentation. So there's this acronym RTFM. You can look it up on Urban Dictionary, and it's funny how often people don't just scan the docs really quickly or actually read the documentation behind the project. It is boring. It's extremely boring, but if you just force yourself to take 20 minutes, half an hour to read through the documentation, scan it, you're going to get through those common problems a lot easier.
Yeah. I love that. I mean, for me, the docs, that's the way to learn, is to just go through, scan it, try stuff. And the worst part is, I hate it when docs put like code that you're not supposed to do in it, because I like don't read that part, and then I go and like try that code, and then it like
don't
breaks.
Don't do this.
And then I like read the paragraph above. It's like, don't do it. Okay. Oh, I get it.
RTFM.
Yeah.
Another one I like to do is, if their docs are out of date or not very good, I like to go to the GitHub search and the GitHub search. I like to go to GitHub search and search for that piece of the API. And then what you can do is you can find other people who have used it in their own projects, and you can see it actually used. Because sometimes the documentation assumes that you know a few things, and if you can actually see it in use case in somebody else's project, it's going to make a lot more sense. So that's like a nice little trick that I like to use for any language. And you can also filter on GitHub by specific languages, and you can exclude common, like sometimes you find like a boilerplate that someone's forked 1,000 times, so you can just remove all of that. Joining Slack and chat for specific tech. So whenever you're learning something, join the Slack room for that, because you're going to find like other people that are at the same point as you. So generally what I like to do is I ask a lot of questions, but then I also like to read what other problems people are having. Like right now I'm specifically in the Apollo, the GraphQL, and the Now, those three Slack rooms. And I try to see all the questions that people are asking.
Yeah, I do this too. And they're or even now Spectrum too, Spectrum and Slack. I'm like all in all those communities. And what you don't want to do though, is you don't want to sign up for the community, ask a question right away, don't contribute, don't be the guy who just signs up and be like, my stuff's broken. And then everyone, you know, and expect everyone to help you and then get mad when it's not, you know. So, but no, I follow those communities. And again, that's part of, like, in my opinion, that like immersion part, because again, if you're seeing all these people talk about stuff and maybe someone's having a problem that you've already solved and you can solve their problem. And then all of a sudden that's a nice little confidence booster, because here you are just learning something, but you're already able to help someone else.
Totally. Another one I have is finding like an accountability buddy. So often I'll see people take my JavaScript 30 course or the CSS Grid course, and they'll either do it at lunch with some coworkers, or if it's a group that's just graduated from a boot camp, they'll all take it together, or people will meet up once a week at a coffee shop and work through one or two of the exercises. And that's awesome, because often people that are in the same headspace, they're at the same point as you, are going to be so much more helpful than somebody that's like way ahead of you. Like, I often laugh at people that are reading like Elon Musk's biography or Richard Branson's book. And it's like, you're not going to learn anything about like running an internet business from Richard Branson, because he's so far ahead of you that the applicable tasty treats that you're going to get from him, they're nowhere to be found, right? So find people who are either where you're at or maybe one step ahead of where you're at, and that's going to be such a better relationship and learning experience for you.
Yeah, totally.
And last one I have is just learn in the open. Put everything up on GitHub, ask lots of questions, share the nuggets you have, because if you blog about something that you had trouble with, and you're not only paying it forward, but you might be opening yourself up to maybe a job with that specific JavaScript. Once you do get better at it, then you could get some work for it. You position yourself as an expert in the industry. You'll likely get a whole bunch of people asking you to write books about that specific topic. That always happens when you write blog posts. And you're just helping other people as well. I think that's super important to pay it forward, because there's other people taking the time out of their day to help you. So why can't you help other people who are sort of coming around that? Scott's dog is barking.
No, I think that follows along too with like a little bit of Lucy Moon. Please stop. Part of that follows along, I think, with the checking your ego part, because like a lot of times people don't want to share that stuff because they think my code's bad. People are going to look at my stuff and judge me. But like, nobody's going to judge you. And if they do, they're just going to help you rather than actually judge you. So if someone's judging you about their stuff, then that's not a person that you need their you know, approval, because that's kind of a rude thing to do. So like, honestly, you need to sort of get over that judgy worrying about if people are going to like or not like your code, because there's always going to be grumpy people like that. But I totally agree. Put your stuff out there in the open. And the worst thing that, or like the best thing that could happen is that someone's going to say, hey, you should do it this way instead in a nice way. And then you have a nice little learning opportunity yourself that you might not have gotten that soon. Maybe you down the line, you would have gotten that same little tidbit, that tasty treat. But like, maybe you get some tasty treats a little bit sooner that way.
Yeah. And on the flip side, if you are someone who, I don't know, there's often a lot of people out there who are really, they care a lot about the way that things are done. And often they come off as overbearing. And we had this in the boot camp where people would DM me all the time the questions that they had because they were too embarrassed to ask them in the open, or they were too afraid of this one guy who would come out swinging with just walk all over you with this, the best way to approach something, where it's just like, I just had a question about how to butter my bread and you're telling me I should fly to Italy and take a bread making course, you know, like
that's a great, yeah.
Which is like, I get that all the time too. I just hate asking questions on Twitter because you just like brace yourself for this just like overbearing answers, and you're doing it the wrong way and everything like that. So like, on the flip side, if you are trying to help someone, always know that someone might be taking a big leap to ask this question, and approach them gently at first until they might start asking for more from you.
Yeah. And if you're in this always a student mentality, right? If you're always looking at yourself as a student and not a master, you're going to be way less likely to think, like, if somebody asks a question, you're going to be way less likely to think, well, that dummy doesn't know the right way to do it like I do. You know, you're more likely to think, oh, cool, they're trying to learn this thing. Let's have a teachable moment here or something like that. Cool. So that pretty much follows it. If you want to check out my talk, I'm sure it's going to be up on Zeit, their YouTube channel at some point here. They have some really sweet production out there. So hopefully it's looking nice and crispy. So I can't wait to see that myself, because I think it was all pretty good. If you want a more concise version with slides and animated GIFs of this same kind of thing. But I hope that clears up some little things. I get so many emails about people being like, man, you put out so many tutorials on so many different topics. How the heck do you learn this stuff? And yeah, these are all of my tools and tips and secrets. I mean, this is it right here. So I'm not leaving anything out. This is what I use to learn stuff really quickly. Do you have any sick picks, Wes? I do have a sick pick over here.
I do. My sick pick is audiobook this time. So I've been following Gary Vaynerchuk for many years. And if you don't know Gary Vaynerchuk, you may have come across him online and been put off by him a little, because he's got this very, very aggressive, like, work, 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 hustle. And like this, his surface layer is not great. But if you can get past that, you realize that he's very genuine. He's just very emphatic about what he's talking about. And the advice and the content that he puts out is top notch. It's extremely good. So if you are trying to build some sort of business, or you even just need a bit of a kick in the pants to keep learning, I would definitely recommend checking out Gary Vaynerchuk's latest book, which is called Crushing It. So I first read his book Crush It, which, like, I don't know, 8-10 years ago.
So there's Crush It and Crushing It.
Yeah. So Crush It came out, let me find when it came out. 2009. So it came out 9 years ago. And it's really what spurred me into that. You can just go ahead and run your own business online. And it sort of like gave me permission to just go for it and not have to have permission from anybody else, you know? What, 9 years later, he has sort of followed up with this next book, which is called Crushing It. And it really just goes into like some social media stuff, but really just like, how do you, as a single person, go out there and run a business and make it happen, even though you're probably short on time and you have all these excuses out there? I highly, highly recommend it. It's super good. I already got my wife listening to it because she's trying to build her own business right now. And it's exactly the advice that I think a lot of people need right now. So check it out. crushing it. The audiobook just came out. It's him narrating it, which is really funny because he goes off script all the time. It's not boring at all. So check it out.
Nice. Cool. I'm definitely going to. I don't consume a lot of Gary V media, but I'm about to because just got a nice big old recommendation for it. So I'm definitely going to have to check that book out. Oh, my sick pick is a library for JavaScript and specifically React, but also JavaScript, is Pop Motion Pose. That's a lot of P's there. Hopefully I didn't pop out my microphone, but we have popmotion.io/pose or just popmotion.io. And Pop Motion Pose is the declarative motion system for HTML, SVG, React, and React Native. And it is pretty much the way I like to look at it is like styled components for animation. You end up defining your components just like you do in styled components. So it's like pose dot the component name or pose wrap the component name if you wanted to use styled components. And then you sort of define different poses or different positions, right? So normal animation sort of libraries, you have like an in and out or whatever, but this is a little bit different. If you had like a menu, you would describe the open state and the closed state. You would describe these two different named states that are two different locations or two different whatever. You can have as many as you want. You could have like 10 different locations or whatever. But then you just pass into the component whatever location you want it to be at. So if you had a menu and you were to have a toggle, you would say, hey, the toggle, now set this to be open. And then with the CSS, it automatically does the animation. You hardly have to set anything. And by default, it has some really nice, sensible defaults for really nice easing, nice little bouncy ease and all that sort of stuff, timing. You can customize all that stuff. But it makes flip animations really easy. It makes animations in React really super easy. I had a chance to play around with this for the past couple of days. And as far as animation libraries go, I found it to be really, really nice. There's like dragging animations make it really super simple. It's pretty all-encompassing for animations. Wow. And it has like, it's really well thought of. And the only downside to this thing right now is that it's still pretty fresh. The docs are kind of lacking. The docs definitely need a little bit more of like practical examples and stuff like that. So maybe if you have some time and you're into it, you can commit some of that. I've been thinking about doing a little YouTube series on this because it's pretty sick. I've been a big fan.
This is so much simpler than like every time I need to do animation, I have to bust out what CSS transition group in React. And I can never remember how it works. And like, you have to like have like transition and a transition group. And then it's always so confusing. And I get a lot of email about it in my course where I try to make it as simple as possible, but people are just still so confused. And at the end of the day, I just want to add and remove classes, or I want to be able to set A and B and flip between the two, or I want to add items to a list and remove it. So this looks awesome.
And let's talk about confusing. Every time you say anything about animations, people are like, React Motion. And React Motion is extremely powerful, but for the life of me, I just cannot get past the API. I can't. I don't love it. I just cannot.
Yeah, I've tried it many times and failed.
It's just not intuitive to me at all. So Pop Motion basically has a lot of the power of something like React Motion, but with the ease of something like styled components. So definitely a new favorite library of mine. I'm going to be adding it to the Level Up site to do some stuff and really get into it. So a big fan.
Wicked.
Shameless plugs? Question mark?
Shameless plug. I will shamelessly plug all of my... Actually, no, I'm going to shamelessly plug my JavaScript 30 course if you haven't taken it already and you are looking at getting better. Like one of the big points we had today is build something that you're invested in, build lots of stuff. That's exactly what this course is dedicated to. JavaScript30.com. It's totally free. The idea behind making it totally free is that you enjoy it so much that you come and buy one of my paid ones, which works really well. Holy smokes. I have 170,000 people have taken this course.
That's nice. So,
maybe you have taken it already. There's not 170,000 people that listen to this podcast.
Nice. Yeah. Highly recommend. I'm going to shamelessly plug my new series, which will be out on Monday, the day that we're recording this. So it'll be out by the time you are listening to this on Wednesday, which is going to be my headless WordPress course. In that course, we cover getting started with headless WordPress. We cover the WordPress API, talk a little bit about just sort of the pitfalls and stuff you can come in. We use Next.js on the backend for a server-side rendered version of your headless WordPress site, as well as Gatsby. So we do both two-pronged approach, right? We do a little bit of Gatsby, we do a little bit of Next, and we talk about the pitfalls and the common issues along with both. Now, what we're not doing is we're not building out a whole blog, because if you've built a theme or anything with WordPress, you know that stuff, right? Or you know what you want it to look like. This is more of a course to say, here's the stuff that you're going to run into, here's the general ideas, and here's how to get up and running with a headless WordPress in 2018, and here's how to totally crush it with that. So check it out. It's called Headless WordPress. It's going to be available at leveluptutorials.com/store, or become a Level Up Pro and get access to stream all that stuff as well.
Sweet.
Super sweet. Yeah, that's it. I don't have anything else. Although I do have another tea story that I promised to tell, although we're sort of running short on time.
All right. Scott's got a tea story. If you'd like to hear his tea story, hang on. If not, we'll see you next week.
Yeah. Sorry. Hey, I don't. This is totally unrelated. I tweeted out about this and people were like, I got to know this whole story. So
I'm curious.
This is a quick one. When I worked at Team Detroit, they didn't have any room for us, so they put us in a hallway. So we just had like card desks in a hallway. Because of that, like all of our personal belongings were just like out in the open. And I had like gone to San Francisco and bought this really high-end fancy tea that you could only get from this one shop in Chinatown. Very, very high-end fancy tea, and I spent a ton of money on it. And I had maybe like two glasses of tea with this bag of tea, and someone stole that off my desk. And it's my fault for leaving it out, but I didn't know where else to put it because I didn't have a desk or anything like that. So someone stole my fancy tea. Like, who steals someone else's fancy tea off their desk at a job? Like, so I went through the office and was like checking all the different cabinets or any. I checked every single kitchenette in this like giant ass building and could not find it. So someone stole it straight up, and that sucks. So for years and years, I've been thinking about this tea that I only got to have a couple glasses of. So I did not know the name of the tea store. I didn't know anything about where it was. I knew what it looked like in Chinatown. So I just started walking around Chinatown. I started texting Courtney. I'm like, I can't find it. I have no idea where it is. Then boom, I see it. I go in there. I tell the story to the guy who gives me a private tea tasting, and he gives me all of his favorite teas, and it was amazing. And here I am right now sipping on this tea that was stolen off my desk several years ago that I am so excited to have once again. And it is delicious. I've been drinking it this entire episode, and I'm just so happy to have it. That's the story for anyone who caught that tweet and was like, what the heck is he talking about? That's it.
Tea thieves. Awesome. Tea thieves. If you didn't, what's your Twitter, Scott?
S. Tolinski. S-T-O-L-I-N-S-K-I.
Beautiful. I'm at WestBoss if anyone else wants to follow us on Twitter. And we're also the same on Instagram as well.
Yep. The IGs. All righty.
Wicked.
That's it.
See you next week. Peace.
Peace. Head on over to syntax.fm for a full archive of all of our shows. And don't forget to subscribe in your podcast player or drop a review if you like this show.